Dinner for Two is brought to you by Vista. If you're a small business owner, entrepreneur, or have a creative idea, Vista will help you bring your vision to life. Through their professional design solutions and services and high-quality marketing products, you can build a brand you can be proud of. Visit vistaprint.com.au to start creating.
Hi, I'm Elise Tran, and welcome to Dinner for Two, presented by Pop Sugar Australia. Welcome to the first episode of Dinner for Two. I mean, why are you listening to this podcast and why do you want to keep on listening? Well, I want to tell you the story of how The Daily Edited, a business I co-founded and exited last year, was built through conversations with leaders in each pillar of business in the consumer goods space. The Daily Edited gave me the platform to continue to incubate and grow new businesses. And for me at this stage, it's like I'm starting again. So, for my first episode, I really wanted to speak to someone who embodies a homegrown startup business, who has built that into a global business and has been running for decades, and is someone that we all love and respect. And that person is Shelley Sullivan, founder of Model Co and M Co, Australia's top beauty brands that have become household names. I'm so excited to have Shelley on. Hi, Shelley. Thanks so much for coming on to this podcast. Really excited to have you.
My pleasure.
I just wanted to talk to you about, you know, starting a business and, you know, really we're here to sort of inspire people around how it is, you know, someone gets going. So for me, like my big question for you is if you had to start Model Co, M Co again today, how would you go about doing that today versus, you know, I don't want to make you look amazing, so I don't want to think, say, 20 years ago, but as opposed to back then?
Look, I definitely think if I had my time again, I'd learn more about the industry that I'm going into. And what I mean by that is when you start a beauty brand, you think you're kind of going into the world of creating beauty products and lip glosses and, you know, looking fabulous. But the reality is you're creating a wholesale business that has a combination of product development, finance, supply chain, logistics, sales, marketing. So it doesn't really matter what your product is, the business foundations are somewhat the similar no matter which kind of wholesale retail business you're going into.
Do you think those foundations of business that you just listed, logistics, finance, marketing, have changed a lot from, you know, back way when to now?
Yeah, look, I think obviously everything's always evolving. Technology has obviously got a lot better. So the way we supply our retailers has become a lot quicker now. Social media landscape and marketing, as you know, has changed. So the way in which we market to our customers is a lot more immediate than otherwise back in the day when you used to, you know, have a product editorial in magazines, Vogue, Marie Claire, Woman's Day, where now it's instantaneous. So marketing is instant. Everything's a lot faster now than what it was before.
Do you prefer that? Like, do you think to yourself, oh, I wish I was starting a business now rather than, you know, when I did?
Yeah, I think definitely it's a lot easier to start a business now than what it was back then. You had to work a lot harder to get eyeballs onto your website and into the retail stores, where now everything's so immediate and, you know, the benefit of social media and all the various different platforms, you can market to people a lot quicker and be a lot more savvy.
Totally. I do feel like, yes, the barriers to entry to business have definitely come down, but the issue is now the market may be more swamped, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, when you had your product, it was super innovative and it still is, but no other players in the market, so to speak. It's an interesting, like, choice anyway. One of the big questions people always ask me, like, how do you find suppliers? Like, how do you start? And it's, you know, taking people back to that. Do you work with any of your original suppliers, or has the world, again, changed so much in terms of supply chain and how you get a product from idea into the shelves of a supermarket or retailer?
Look, we still work with a lot of our original suppliers. We're obviously always looking globally for new suppliers and manufacturers. As the brand's grown, we've had a lot of suppliers and manufacturers come to us. I mean, whether or not it's myself or someone starting a business, you know, that's part of the entrepreneur of the business is to find suppliers and weed out the not great suppliers versus the new suppliers, and that's just part of business.
Totally, I agree. You kind of have to trial and error, order samples, hate them, you love them, keep working, and then
there's
realize,
no shortcut.
Yeah, totally. Do you feel like people need to know, and again, going back to your thing before around like the pillars of business, do you think people need to know everything from how to pack an order to how like a P&L works through to being kind of like a little bit digitally adept with a website in order to run a business? Or do you think...
100%.
Yeah.
I think you really need to be well-rounded. Whilst you may be stronger in certain areas. You definitely need to surround yourself with people that are stronger in the areas that you're not, but you definitely need to have the basis of business. You need to understand the P&L, you need to understand the marketing and sales, how much you're going to spend on marketing to get a return on your investment, the channel to market. Are you just going to be direct to consumer, or are you going to have bricks and mortar as well, and what the different cost factors are? I mean, there's so many facets to running a business. Yeah, definitely. You need to be very well-rounded.
For sure. And I think there's a lot of material and stuff out there that I think, you know, you didn't have access to, and even I didn't have access to, in order to sort of get across some of these key things. So I don't think it's insurmountable, but it's more like, yes, as you say, good to know, and, you know, just puts you in that good stead. So in saying that, then how do you think businesses gain momentum? So let's say someone's, you know, managed to sort of upskill a little bit around how to run a Shopify site, how to use Xero, how to, like, you know, market on social media, and they've gotten, you know, a product that is out there. How do you think people gain momentum these days?
Oh, God, it's hard to say. Look, I think that, I mean, I'm in a very different stage of my business versus somebody that's new into the market, but there are a lot of short courses and business courses. What new business owners have now that we didn't have is you've got the Xeros, as you said, and the Shopify and Magento and you know, all of these layman's versions of starting a business.
Yeah.
And so you've got that, and you've also got, you know, a lot of young people coming up through the ranks that know how to use them. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot more now. I wish that I had back then. So there's definitely a lot more for the new business starter.
What do you think causes a product or a service to really, like, tick over? And, you know, when, you know, you go from 10 sales to 20 sales to 100 to 1,000, like, what do you think, you know, gives a product or service like an X factor that causes it to get onto that trajectory?
People always want to feel like they've discovered something. So, and also they want something that feels luxury. So our with MCO Beauty, for instance, we're all about luxe for less. So why go and buy a Tom Ford foundation for $100 when you can get the same look and feel for less? So people always want to feel like everything's a bit premium, but they're also getting a bargain. So I think it's a combination of finding something premium that is well-priced. I think the customers loving it and talking within the community and customer engagement, I think, is important. So obviously having great social media channels and outreach, I think seeding and gifting influencers and ambassadors that are great for your brand is key. So it's like a bit of a 360 degree.
I totally agree. Yeah, it's all of that stuff in combination that creates that hubbub around something that then causes someone to gain momentum and sort of go to that next level. I've kind of read a lot about your businesses and things and your distribution strategy, and kind of like quite interested in that, because I've always gone direct to consumer. I've had very few wholesale relationships in the work that I've done, and wholesale is changing a lot, right? People keep talking about it all the time. How do you decide whether to focus on your own channels versus your wholesale relationships?
Oh, look, we've got a really strong e-commerce business where we have an e-commerce strategy where we engage with our customers and we give them something special by shopping online with us, be it a gift or be it some type of bonus or loyalty for shopping online. But we have such a large distribution network, like we're in every single Woolworths store. We're in Big W now. We're about to do a pop-up store with Best & Less and Model Co's within Chemist Warehouse and Big W. So pretty much I'd say 80, 90% of my business is bricks and mortar. So we're kind of like retailer first. So when we have our marketing strategies, it's always how do we drive foot traffic into our retailers? And yes, we have a distribution strategy for e-commerce, but definitely we're bricks and mortar focused.
Like, how did you decide upon that though? Or was that just what where the market sat? You know, people were buying the product in real life.
That's where the market sat. Yeah.
And then that'll dictate that path for someone, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit like that within the Roundhouse for me. Sometimes it's weird because people like to buy that product in real life, even though it's not something that I feel like people need immediately. I find it very interesting as well.
Well, they want to touch and feel and look at it, and they want to look at, say, for instance, your Roundhouse plates. I know I have some.
Yeah.
What size is it? Is it 30 centimetres? Is it 40 centimetres? And I think sometimes when you visualise product, you like, I mean, with our foundations, people want to touch and feel the formulation. Sometimes they just want to go into store. So, I mean, I do think the world's definitely shifting to more direct to consumer because people are just so time poor now, and they've got good return policies and you are able to shop online. So,
yeah. Maybe because I don't have free returns, I'm in the Roundhouse, people want to see it in real life. But it's funny because even with the Daily Edited, the product was so something that I felt like people wanted. There were a lot of people that wanted to see it in real life, and they wanted to see all their personalization options and things in real life. But in any event, the online business was always the biggest component of that. Whereas with this, new product that I have, I'm like, oh, like you can see it quite well online. So it's very interesting. So like you say, the customer will dictate where, you know, and help you and guide you on, I guess, where to go. Then for you, you know, you obviously have nailed product, you've got this distribution. And but then when I hear you to speak to other people, you're like constantly pushing it to another level. You're like, now we're going to go global, now we're going to do this stuff. How, you know, what kind of motivates you to keep scaling, like, and keep taking risks?
I think because I know that we have a product that anyone around the world would buy. And I think obviously nailing the Australian market and making sure that we've got the distribution right here, because we've got such a great social following, we have women from all parts of the world wishing and wanting our products in their territories. Now, they might be able to buy it online, but again, nothing beats feeling the product in the hand. So that's why I'm inspired to launch into international markets, is because women want to be able to touch and feel our product as well as shop online.
And you don't find that tiring. So, you know, you hit one target, you're like,
I'm tired.
You're tired, yeah.
It's tight. Everything's tight. Look, I love what I do. We've got a great team of people, and I think you always want to continue to keep growing. So, yeah, I think the consumer leads the growth, really. Yeah.
And you just have to go for it, because you don't want to disappoint someone in the UK who wants to buy your product from Boots. So how do you stay on top of all of this stuff? Because you're very in tune with what's cool, what's happening on the social media, what's happening with your traditional retail partners. Like, how is Shelley Sullivan staying on top of this all?
Look, we, as I said, I've got a great team of people that are obviously constantly researching new product development and what women wish they had in their beauty regime that all the other brands aren't providing. Again, our customers are at the forefront of what women want next. So as an example, through our social media channels, we have an idea that we want to launch an SPF or something, and we go out and say, what do you want to see next in colour or skin from MCO Beauty? Literally within a day, I know what product we're launching next. So we really let the women dictate and men dictate what they want to see from us. So whilst I've got a hint and our team are coming up with NPD, I also rely on our consumers, and they're so engaged with our brand. We've just launched some SPFs in the range. We've got a pink clay mask coming out and a cleanser, and they're very different products. And you'd say, well, why are you launching it? It's because what our customers want. They've been on to us now about a lighter form of a cleanser versus a salicylic one. We've got a pink clay mask dropping next week. We've got SPFs launching tomorrow. So those
can't
ideas.
Try those.
Yes, we'll have to send you some. They're launching at the moment. So we are very much driven by what our customers want.
Dinner for Two is brought to you by Vista. If you're a small business owner, entrepreneur, or have a creative idea, Vista will help you bring your vision to life. Through their professional design solutions and services and high-quality marketing products, you can build a brand you can be proud of. Visit vistaprint.com.au to start creating.
So you've got this huge pool of customers now, right? It's not even a pool, it's an ocean of customers. And so in terms of, like, I mean, you just get to market to them, but in terms of the most effective thing you've ever done to, say, market to a new audience, or, you know, move the needle massively where you want to see, like, a big uptick, what's the best thing you've ever done marketing wise?
Every year we try and do what we call disruptive marketing. So I try to do something that disrupts the beauty industry. So last year we partnered with Celeste Barber.
Yep, I loved that.
And she was not your quintessential beauty girl. She was like this real woman who had a great following of just the everyday consumer. So I partnered with her to communicate our Lux for Less messaging, or Australian cruelty-free vegan. Yeah, she was great. So we used her. We went on Love Island once. So we always think of out-of-the-box ideas to communicate our messaging.
Did you choose Celeste, or, like, you know, is she someone you follow, or was that kind of led by your team and customers? I'm just curious to know.
She had just come off the back of the bushfire drive I think she raised 50 or 80 million for the bushfires. And I saw the power of this everyday woman who was a comedian and thought, well, wow, if she can communicate and raise that much money for charity, surely she's got influence within a large variety, like, you know, a span of consumers from, you know, 5 to 60, like everyone follows this woman. So it was actually my husband, Anthony, said to me, why don't you partner with Celeste Barber? So I reached out to her. She already knew the brand.
Did you DM her personally? Like, this comes from Shelley Sullivan.
Yes.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that's how, well, she actually knows Rosie Huntington-Whiteley really well.
Yeah.
And then when I reached out to her, then I spoke to her manager, then, you know, she figured out that, you know, we'd worked with Hayley and Rosie, and then she put and really these celebrities, they want to work with other women in business and brands that know how to treat them and know how to make it work. And I got along really well with her. We hit it off and we just had a great collaboration.
And so did you see immediate growth in that MCO? Because I mean, she was really around that MCO product, you know, straight after that. And
She was definitely, I mean, we work with about 100 influencers at any one time. We also work with various other forms of marketing, television, radio, you know, so on and so forth. She was definitely a strong pillar. And, yeah, we definitely saw with her influence a lot of brand awareness and growth in our product sales.
Yeah, and is that always the case with celebrity, or have you ever, like, worked with someone?
Not all the time.
Yeah.
It really does depend. I mean, sometimes, I mean, we have a pretty good gut feel for who we think is going to work, and we have a wide variety of ages and skin tones and nationalities because it's not one magic bullet. It's a combination.
Of everything, yeah.
Of everything.
A lot of people are very kind of fascinated with celebrity endorsement, and, you know, you're one of, like, the leaders in Australia in the space. Do you feel like it's sustainable now? Like, if we talk about the changing media landscape and influencer and stuff and how people perceive celebrity, do you think this concept of celebrity campaigns is going to continue?
Yeah, look, I had a modelling agency before I had this, so I've basically been in business 30-something years. Celebrity or some type of celebrity, be it, you know, what's a celebrity? Is it a movie star? Is it an influencer? That will always be a part of the landscape in some way, shape or form. It may differ from back from the old days when a model was a celebrity. Now, your everyday influencer is a celebrity. Like, we used Martha from MAF. She's fabulous and she's a celebrity in her own right. So that word celebrity is such a big word. But I always see that ambassadors, other businesswomen, people who have influence will always be a part of our strategy and should be a part of a strategy of any brand within our industry.
Yeah, for sure. Like, even for me in, like, the homeware space, you know, we would work towards working with someone at a major level like that again, because I do think, yeah, there's a massive halo effect and, as you say, awareness and things that you've spoken to other people about before that I find inspiring, and it's nice to be like, yes, this is still a thing. So you've come across, you know, you've been in the industry for ages, you've come across a lot of girls and a lot of women who have worked in your business, and they've all, maybe a few of them have wanted to be entrepreneurs. Do you think that this is something that can be taught in your instinct? Because just the way that you talk about business is, like, so engaging, you know everything, and do you think people can become you or versions of you?
Look, I think you've either got the drive to take risk or you don't, and I think you've either got it in you or you don't, really.
Yeah.
That's not to say that you can't work alongside an entrepreneur for a long period of time and then build the confidence to take the risk and start your own. It's really about confidence and taking the risk. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. I thought I was creating a heated eyelash curler to curl someone's lashes, and the next minute I was in Colette in Paris and everyone around the world wanted to. I had no idea what I was doing, but I just knew that I wanted to take a risk and earn more than what I was earning back, you know, 20 years ago, and maybe I could dabble in the beauty industry. I mean, I think you never really know what you're doing until you kind of, like, knee deep.
What is it that is scary though about it, so to speak? Do you know what I mean? Like, people are always like, but what do you think?
I mean, if they're asking the question, they're probably not an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
They think you've got it. I mean, what you've created with the Roundhouse is fabulous, what you do with TDE. I mean, you know yourself, like, I look at other women in the industry, like Ava Matthews done a fantastic job with Ultraviolet. I think Zoe's done a great job with GoTo. You've either got it in you or you don't.
Do you ever think that, you know, for example, you'd have your own brick and mortar, MCO stores and things?
No. There's no way. I don't know, but I think I'd die. Like, no. Look, I have it in the past, you know, 10 years ago, I thought, do we open up tanning salons? I don't know what I was drinking the Kool-Aid back then of tanning.
I don't think I'd do that.
I've got enough going on.
Yeah, okay. So there is sort of kind of natural selection within your business too as to how you go about things, because you know, there are many things that you could do. It seems as though you're very happy to scale out product and that range, but the distribution channels and your own brick and mortar versus working with a Big W or what have you is totally off the table. How did you come to that decision though? Like, because that's interesting, because for me, I love brick and mortar. I'm like, I can't wait to have in the Roundhouse stores.
Oh, look, you know what? It's another whole world. I mean, you've got training, staff, point of sale units, like, you know, point of sale systems.
Yeah, but you've got to train people on wholesale systems, like, you know, when you're working with these big retailers, even just like invoicing them is hard, you know?
Look, I think if I was you, I'd probably do it with your business, but I wouldn't do it with mine because, you know, you've got your stock, and your stock's your plate, you know, or your platters, or your, you know, napkins and so on and so forth. With us, we've got foundations, then we've got testers, then we've got, you know, cleanliness, and then we've got, you know, it's beauty products is different to what you're doing. Yeah. If I was doing what you were doing, I'd probably have a store.
Yeah, okay, cool. That does make me feel better. So you mentioned some of those beauty brands that you think are doing a great job, but in general in business, in Australia or globally, who do you think is doing really well?
I think, as I mentioned, there's some great Australian ladies, you know, Zoe at GoTo, and Ava's doing great things with Ultraviolet. I think in the US, Glossier has done a great job. Emily Weiss, how she had her
blog.
What do you say, and
just the sheer scale?
Well, no, I think obviously her strategy was she obviously had her Into the Gloss blog and then created a consumer following, and then she took that consumer following and then translated that into a cult range of people that wanted to and believed in her and her. I think she started with 3 skincare products. So yeah. I thought it was an interesting way to start rather than starting a product and then putting it on the shelf and then trying to find the followers. She already had the disciples and the followers following her and what she was doing, and then she translated that into sales.
Yeah, that's super interesting because, Shelley, you know, that's super topical because everyone is talking about Glossier and then this playbook around how they created that brand to then be kind of one of the most loved D2C beauty brands, but there's been a huge downfall of that brand, and you've probably seen that in the business press and on social media and things, because I think at the end of the day, people have kind of analysed and gone, well, the product wasn't quite there. So what do you think of that when you see things like that happen to other founders? You know, it was, I mean, I think it's extremely critical because I think they've done a fab job, as you say. But
yeah, I think it's critical. I think they've done a fab job. I mean, there's always someone trying to shoot someone down.
Yeah. How have you dealt with that? I don't think you've had anything.
God, I've had so many ups and downs along the way. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, but how do you recover from anything? Like, I've had ups and downs for sure already.
I mean, you just got to take the issue on head on and work out, just be honest about what the issue is and how you've overcome it.
Keep going, I guess. And I think that is the whole entrepreneurial thing, right? You just like, you
get up and keep going.
Yeah, totally. In terms of anything you can tell us about Model Co, M Co, I know you've mentioned a few products and stuff already, global expansion. I mean, this sounds like a lot already, and it's very early in 2022. You know, where do you hope to have those businesses by the end of the year?
The end of the year is here now, really, if you think about it, because we plan a year out. So we've just pretty much doubled our space in Woolworths across the country. They're a great partner, working with our retailers to bed down what our brand looks like in store to make the products easily shoppable. Focusing more on our e-commerce channels. We've got a lot of new innovation coming out in colour and skincare. Yeah, so inventing within our own category.
When do you start planning 2023, out of interest?
Probably June.
June, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Do you spit out all of your ideas to your team as they come, or will you wait to not overwhelm people?
It's easy to get excited, so we try to just block it down into 6-month chunks in here. But there's lots of innovation in the pipeline and lots of great ideas.
Anything on that celebrity front for this
week? We're working on a couple in the background. Nothing I can – we haven't locked anything in yet. But, yeah, there'll be someone soon.
Yeah. And are you finding things like that easier – you know, because you used to bring out celebrities and that was always so exciting, you know.
I know. No one can travel.
Exactly.
So I'm looking to bring, you know, we're always open to bring someone out. We're huge on, you know, global execution. So, look, I think the right person at the right time, we definitely would want them to travel.
How are you finding that to negotiate and stuff in this day and age?
Fine.
Fine. People are open to it again.
Yeah. I think they're open to it. It's just about travel and time.
Shelley, thank you so much for coming on for Dinner for Two. Love that chat. I'm super inspired, thinking about a lot of things here.
My pleasure.
Love that whirlwind chat with Shelley. That would have been the fastest dinner ever. I think entree only. But it makes sense when you're running an empire like that. In any event, I think my 3 key takeaways from this conversation were that if you're starting out in business or you're already in business and there is an area of weakness that you have, awesome if you are nailing everything and I'm super jealous. Educate yourself on any area that you feel like you're a bit weak. For me, it's definitely finance. Like, I have, you know, numbers jumble up when they're in front of me. So I would definitely be looking into that. Secondly, think about customers to lead and inform your product strategy. Again, for me, I'm always one of those people who is like, I need to set the trends. But it is nice to hear that for a business as large as M Co, Model Co, that they really do inform their product strategy through their customers. And third, love that celebrity is still a big part of a marketing strategy. Like for me, it's very comforting and is something that I'm definitely working towards because I do see such huge value in working with celebrities and the halo effect they have on brands.
Thanks so much for joining us for Dinner for Two. I'm Elise Tran.